Coming in. Good to see you. Well, can I welcome you? It's great to you're at the right seminar. That's your first 2 years in ministry. Yeah. Okay. Well, great to see you. My name's Trev. I'm a youth worker in Liverpool. Are you from Liverpool, isn't it? Oh, can you, no worries. We have a resident Scouser here. My three daughters are growing up with a Scouse accent. Great sacrifice in gospel work. And I've been there 2 years, and I was previously at a church in Chessington as a youth worker for 12. So I can just about remember my first year. Honestly. Come on in, great to see you. Great to see you. Right. I'm going to pray, and then if you can. Dear Father, thank you so much that you are a wonderful God, full of compassion and mercy. We thank you to the Lord Jesus, who comes in every way that we are, yet without sin. We thank you to come to a God who knows what it's like to be human, with all the joys and all the pressures that brings. And Father, we pray now as we think about this issue of first year, first couple of years in ministry, we pray that you give me, you give us all our hearts that we want to learn, and you give us tender hearts. Well, it's really great to have you here. The way I prepared this is basically to ask this question. If the great Apostle Paul was sitting here now, what advice would he give to you? Good question, isn't it? If the great Apostle was sitting here, what advice would he give you, young youth workers? If he was running a seminar on essentials for ministry, what would he say? What advice would he have to a young man, a young woman like you, leading a youth or children's work with much older people in the team? Maybe who have been doing youth work for longer than you've been alive. I think there are, aren't there? If you're a youth worker, there's probably people in your team that have been doing youth or children's work for longer than you've been alive. And what do you do when the way that they're doing youth work is completely different to what you've been taught this week? How do you approach someone who's older than you in your team? What foundation would Paul want you to lay for being a youth worker or children's worker? Well, we can find out the exact answers if we take time to read and study Paul's letters, his last sort of testament, 1 to Timothy. And what I often do, often if I'm feeling quite down in ministry, or if I'm feeling challenged, or if I'm feeling like giving up, I just turn to 1 or 2 Timothy, especially 2 Timothy, and I just read it and read it and read it. A couple of years ago, I was feeling very much like that. I just read 2 Timothy every day. So we can know what Paul would say to you. Oh, wait, great, we don't have to imagine it. We can know. Fantastic, isn't it? So, what would Paul say? Well, I think his key verse to begin with would be 1 Timothy 4, verse 16. So if you all can all turn that up. If he was facing you lot, and Paul was sitting here, I'll definitely be sitting where you are, drinking it all in. But if Paul was here, what would he say? The first thing he'd say, I think, would be 1 Timothy 4, verse 16. He would say to you and me, watch your life and doctrine closely. Persevere in them, because if you do, you will save both yourself and your hearers. Watch your life and doctrine closely. Brilliant. Both things, isn't it? It's your mind and it's your character. Both things. Develop a godly character, develop a theological mind. And it's these two things I want us to concentrate on today, for these two things, according to Paul, are the main foundation stones. Alright? So in your first year, how are you getting on with those two things? Let's have a look at that. Your godly character and your theological mind. And how can you keep on developing them? First thing Paul says is watch your life. Bible reading and prayer. You know, central to every Christian's life is what? Is personal holiness. Before your responsibility to be a youth worker, before your responsibility to any of your children or youth leaders, your first responsibility is your own personal holiness. And that doesn't change because you're a youth worker. If anything, it becomes even more important. Far from lessening the call to a holiness, actually intensifies that as we become in so many ways a model for others to follow, especially when we're working with young people and children. If you were a youth worker before, but as soon as you know, when you come into a full-time capacity, even more so, children and young people are looking up to you as their model of what a Christian is. All right? You already know that. Listen to what Paul says. 2 Timothy 1, verses 9 and 10. Who has saved us and called us to a holy life. Not because of anything we have done, but because of his own purpose and grace. This grace was given to us in Christ Jesus before the beginning of time. Being a full-time in no way excuses you from having a quiet time. And think again, if you think it's going to be easier than when you were a student or at work. Now, when Satan looks at you, what does he hate the most about you? What he hates the most about you is that you're made in the image of God. He doesn't actually hate you. He doesn't really truck with you personally. What he hates is God's image in you. And that's the thing he's going to want to undermine. That's the thing he's going to want to attack. What he wants to attack in your life is your intimacy with God. That's what he wants to go for. And if you know, Tim was staying with me last weekend, Tim Hawkinson, and the weekend before. You know, what's special about him? He's just a normal bloke who wants to be godly. That's the first most important thing. The thing that impresses me most with Tim Hawkins is he's just a normal bloke. There's nothing flash about him, is there? He's just a normal bloke. Number one, wants to be godly. Everything else flows from that. And that's basically what Paul is saying. Therefore, apply exactly the same principles to your quiet time as you were before you were in full-time Christian work. Develop a routine. The exact time that you meet from day to day may differ according to the kind of week you have. So, if you're on your day off, I wouldn't expect you to get up whatever time you get up and have your quiet time when you have it. So, look at your week. Be strategic and plan your week as much as you can. And put in where you're going to daily meet with God. Look at how your week pans out and set times accordingly. For me, the most difficult times where I often miss my quiet times is usually when that structure goes at weekends, when I have a day off and the structure's gone, or on holidays. That's when I find quiet times most hard, because my structure's gone. In every area of your life in full-time Christian work, self-discipline is crucial. Now, for some of you, maybe you're doing a year out. Some of you are young, I'm sure, but you know, if you're thinking of full-time Christian work, let me just say, often people aren't cut out for full-time Christian work, not because they haven't got heart after God, not because they haven't got a godly character, they just haven't got the temperament for it. And some of that can be self-discipline. I can think of friends of mine who are godly blokes, but they just could not be self-disciplined enough to be full-time Christian workers. They have to be somewhere at 9 o'clock, start work and finish at 5. They could not sit at home and be self-disciplined. That may be you. Now this year you might find that out. Alright? But self-discipline is crucial for any Christian, but especially for a full-time Christian worker. Just listen to what Paul says again. Endure hardship with us like a good soldier of Christ Jesus. No one serving as a soldier gets involved in civilian affairs. He wants to please his commanding officer. Similarly, if anyone competes as an athlete, he does not receive a victor's crown unless he competes according to the rules. A hard-working farmer should be the first to receive the share of the crops. Reflect on what I'm saying, for the Lord will give you insight into all this. What are the three people he chooses? Farmer, athlete, soldier. Why does he choose those three? What marks each one of them? Hard work? Yeah, and discipline. Yeah? Now, Paul is saying that they're our examples. Now, I'm not being harsh in that. You know, this year may be a brilliant year, but at the end of it you think, oh, it's just not cut out for me because I just can't discipline myself and work by myself. There's no shame in that. It's good that you've had a year that can help you in that. Just on prayer. Now, I don't know if ladies you'll agree with this. It'd be good to get your take on this. And if there's any questions that you either agree, disagree, or want more clarification on them, write them down, and we'll have a question time at the end. You know, as blokes, I think we are. How do we approach life? We approach life incredibly task orientated. Girls far more relational. Right, on the whole, far more relational. I know with my wife, if their relationships are going well, life's worth living. Me, if my task is going well, life's worth living. It's not that I'm not into relationships or she's not into tasks. But as blokes, that's the way God has made us. We're task orientated. Therefore, I think that's one of the reasons I think we find prayer so hard. If you sit and pray for half an hour, what have you actually got to show for it? You have nothing on paper, you haven't got anything written on your computer. It doesn't look as if you've achieved anything, does it? Therefore, the way I seek to approach prayer is very much not obviously it's a development of a relationship with God, but to see it as a task. My work. When you pray, be creative in how you pray and when you pray. Often I will walk, I'll just go for a walk and pray. What I'll often do, this is what I usually do in my quiet time, is like in moments this morning, I'll read a psalm, and then what I find is I write in the centre anything that speaks to me from what I've read. Okay? So this morning, Judah is sanctuary, Israel is dominion. I wrote that in the middle. Then the sea looked and fled, and I'll write that down. And then tremble all the earth at the presence of the Lord. So I'll write that down. So I'll write those things down. Yesterday, it was the Lord is exalted over the nations, his glory above the heavens. Who is like the Lord? The one who is enthroned. Now they're the key thoughts I want to meditate on. And then what I do is I pray them to myself. And then I pray them to other people that I'm praying to. But try and let what I read dominate what I pray. And if I'm getting through that word, it's a great thing to pray for other people, isn't it? So I was praying for Christians in Iraq that they would remember the Lord as he thought they would remember. That his glory above the heavens. There's no one like him. And everyone I'm praying for. Now that's just something I've done. Recently, last couple of years, I write my prayers. They're all my prayers. I write them. But the prayers I've done, I've fallen either through the street, I've got distracted. So I thought this at the beginning of the year, I had another one last year. I just write them. Alright? Now, I don't know if you will find, seek to be creative in prayer. In your quiet times, go from different things. Don't stay with the same thing all the time. Has anyone here ever used Donald Carson's Through the Bible in the Year? Have you used that? It's similar. It's actually the same reading program, but what you get with Carson is what's it called now? It's a big thick book, and there's four readings which you go through the Bible in a year, and he'll comment on one of them. It's great. So usually I just did one of the readings, so I didn't do them all. But I would say try and get as much as you can structure into your personal walk with God. Alright, don't let that be compromised. It easily can. There's always something to do. There's always another talk to write. There's always another young person to ring up. Alright, there's always something to do. But if your own personal walk with God is not close, then you'll run out of gas. So you'll be giving, 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 but there'll be nothing there left to give. Okay? And Satan will attack that. Let me assure you. He will attack that. So guard it. Alright? Anyone want to come back to me on that point? Alright? Secondly, Paul's message to those who are young. Most youth workers, as I've said, are often a lot younger than the other leaders in their team. And as I said, you may be working with people who are a lot older than you. Now, what's the temptation in a situation like that for an older person? If you're working with an older person, what's the temptation of an older person? Is to look down upon you because you're young, because you're wet behind the ears, you don't know anything. And there may be a lot of truth in that. Certainly in life experience, you know, can know very little. Their temptation is to look down upon you. Your pitfall as a young person may be what? Yeah, and to think you know. You know, you might go on a year's training program or somewhere, or do a Cornell training course, or come on a conference like this, and you learn loads of brilliant things, but you think you know more than they do. And sometimes you might know the right principles in a way that they've never been taught or shown. So what is Paul's advice here? Well, Paul's advice is clear. Gain their respect. How? How are you to gain an older person's respect, according to Paul? Not with the gifts that God has given you. That's not the first way. So don't seek to gain the respect by how brilliant you can give a talk, or how brilliantly you relate to the young people. Right, they're important things, but they're not the most important. That isn't how you gain respect. Nowhere does Paul say, gain respect by your gifts. Now what he says is, gain respect by the quality of your godly character. Alright? So listen to what he says, 1 Timothy 4:12. Don't let anyone look down on you because you're young. But set an example for the believers how? In speech, in life, in love, in faith, and in purity. Read it again. Don't let anyone look down on you because you are young, but set an example for the believers in speech, in life, in love, in faith, in purity. So how are you to win the heart of the older person in your team who may look down upon you? By developing a godly character. Alright? In your dealings with older men and women, Paul says this is how you should act, okay? Do not rebuke an older man harshly, but exhort him as if he were your father. Treat younger men as brothers, older women as mothers, and younger women as sisters with absolute purity. If you've got a good relationship with your dad, you may not have, but let's just imagine all those of you who have, or imagine if you haven't, you did have a good relationship with your dad. If your dad was doing something wrong and you feel he needed to be rebuked, how would you do it? Would you do it in front of the rest of the family? How would you do it? You do it with great respect. You might say, if you play golf, let's go out. We'll have to go to golf tomorrow then. And maybe on the 17th hole, you might just bring it up. Wouldn't you? Girls, how would you rebuke your mum? If she was doing something wrong. How would you do that? You'd take a massive amount of care, wouldn't you? Why? Because she's your mum. And she deserves respect because of her age. And because of who she is. Well, Paul says, have that kind of approach to an older man or woman in your church. Treat older men as fathers, older women as mothers. And younger women, what does Paul say about that? With absolute purity. Never think for a minute, guys, that you're stronger in this area than you really are. Alright? What does George Verwer say? Guys, remember, you have Rolls-Royce engines with Volkswagen brakes. Alright? You have Rolls-Royce engines with Volkswagen brakes. You know, there'll be loads of opportunities, you know, for you to fall in this area, guys. Sometimes the more gifted you are, the more dynamic personality you are, the more team members or girls in the youth group will be attracted to. There's loads of opportunities to fall into respect. If I ever meet a member of the youth group or a young leader, I'll never meet them. I've got an office at the church, so I'll never meet them in my office. There's a cafeteria in our church, I'll always meet them there, where everybody else is, lots of other people. Alright? I'll never meet with a young lady on my own. Never. Number one, I don't trust myself. And number two, I'm called to be above reproach. So what? It's a wrong view. What? There may be nothing going on, but what might look wrong is very important. Okay? So, really, really be careful in that. I can remember
a few years ago, there was a girl that came to a youth group. She was a lovely girl. Family split up. What she was looking for was love from a father figure, which was nothing wrong, because she never had that. I remember once sitting down in a church, she came straight, sat on my lap, put her arms around me. She was about 13. So I said, look, we just don't do that here. It's best if you don't do that. Well, I said, no, it's really best if you don't do that. Now, what I needed to give her in some way, be a kind of father figure to her. So there's nothing wrong with her looking for that. There was nothing sexual or wrong in that she was looking for. She was just looking for that, but she was looking for it in an inappropriate way. Certainly inappropriate as far as I was concerned. So to be that kind of figure to her, but she had to learn that it wasn't to be like that. And young guys, you've really got to be careful there. Be careful with what you watch. The days we're living in today, again, I speak to guys especially, hopefully you ladies are not offended by this, but just by a click of a switch, we can look at things on our computer that are totally and utterly simple and unhelpful. All right, guys, if you've got a problem with that, then think of a godly Christian that you can be accountable to. All right, we're all sinners. All right, so I'll be very surprised if there aren't people who are playing in that way. But get someone who you can be accountable to. A friend of mine is a full-time Christian worker, and he had a thing on his computer that any website he went onto, it went straight to a friend of his and told them. All right, great, fantastic idea. All right. So again, just realise what you are. You're a sinner, saved by grace. You have a very filthy, horrible heart, just like mine. All right. So respect that. And guard against it. Okay, anyone want to come back to me on any of those things? Yeah.
The only problem you have is a girl. You have to allow, like, if a girl wants to chat, how that person can be allowed.
Yeah, I think it would, yeah. Yeah. I think even if it's a younger bloke, even then you need to be careful in today's world. It needs to come from a non-Christian home. I'll probably say if it was a leader, I wouldn't have a problem. He was a young person, I'd probably want to meet. Obviously, if they wanted to talk something about really personal, you'd have to make sure it was appropriate. But I think just in the world we're living in today, you've just got to be really careful. Some kids can come from such horrendous backgrounds. And if they did, it wouldn't take that much for them to accuse you of something. If you're in a public place, then you have eyes that can vouch for you. Just got to be really careful to them. Yeah. I think just really being interested in her life, really. Sitting down and just chatting as a loving father would. How's your week been? How's your friends? Making sure that maybe other ladies were given a, I don't mean hugging, but kind of affection that was again appropriate. I can remember another girl who came from a broken home, and she was a pain in the neck in the youth group. I can remember once having a game of table tennis with her. And it was in a public area, it was just me and her. We just played nearly all night. That one game of table tennis really changed the whole way she was in the group. Just because she'd had a really caring experience of a kind of father figure. And I am a father figure, because I'm a lot older than a lot of you. For you, it wouldn't be a father figure, it'd be more like an older brother. Again, get one of the things that Tim Hawkins makes in his book, I think Fruit That Will Last, and his leader's one, is you have different stages in being a youth worker. So for me, with 11 to 14, it's more like a father figure. It used to be, in the old days, an older brother. And you've got to enjoy being the age you are. It'd be stupid if I kind of came in trying to look all hip and trendy. Young people see through that straight away. They expect me to dress and be like a 40-year-old bloke. That's what I am. I know I don't look like that. Well, that is right. And I would just encourage you, the older you get, just be what you are, and the kids will really respond to that. Any other? If anything else comes up, then just think. The next thing, develop a theological mind. I would say, again, you, a lot of you are already quite young, but I would say, rely upon friends. Seek out friends who will stretch you, challenge you, support and encourage you. One of the things that I miss, having moved from Chessington to Liverpool, is I haven't got so many friends who will really challenge me on what the youth work is like at where I am, and question me. When I was down at Chessington, I used to specifically, I had loads of good friends who I'd spend time with, who would evaluate the work I did and challenge it, which was good. So get to know older Christians who can advise you on what books you should be reading, which will stretch you theologically and culturally. Maybe even if you don't have anyone like that, then pull aside Ian Fry, pull aside Tim Thornburgh this week, people like that, and say, you know, I've been thinking about this issue. What theological book, what really good Christian book do you think could really stretch me on this? What biography? Maybe read a biography with another Christian, an older Christian, or maybe a good theological book, or a book that is really working hard at critiquing the culture. Now, seek to develop your theological mind, and often the best way to do that is with an older Christian. Think of an older Christian in your church that maybe you can meet up on a one-to-one with every week or every other week. I'm presently meeting every week, or three times a week, with three one-to-ones, and one of them is with an old, he's about late 20s, bright, really bright guy, and we're reading the book together. Well, it's doing me the world of good. Hopefully it's doing him that. But seek to develop your theological mind. Don't leave it where it is. Alright, I want to be as hungry as I can to know as much about God that I can cram into my little brain, so that I can know him better, love him more, and teach him better. One of the brilliant spin-offs from a conference like this is that you can build up a network of contacts who in time then become friends who can help you in your work. For those of you who are from London, anyone from the London area here? Alright, the Capital Youth Works is a great forum to do that. You know, see Nick Margeson who led last night. He kind of runs that. Or talk to him. They have lunches a couple of times a term. Great, and have a speaker. It's a great. Just build up a network of people that you can meet with. Same, we have one in the Northwest Partnership. We've got Ian and Nina coming up for a day next week. And just seek to, as much as you possibly can, develop your theological mind. Next, if this makes sense, in your ministry, learn what to die for. Okay? Learn what to die for. One of the key lessons to learn in Christian ministry is to learn what is important and what is not so important. Okay? When you're young, everything's important. You get a new truth and you want to die for it. That's there can be really positives to that. But as you go on in your Christian ministry, there are loads of issues that are raised which will be incredibly easy to get into massive debates over, which could easily lead to confrontation and arguments. Listen again to what Paul says in 2 Timothy 2:23. Don't have anything to do with foolish and stupid arguments, because you know that they produce quarrels. And the Lord's servant must not quarrel. Instead, he must be kind to everyone, able to teach, not resentful. Those who oppose him, he must gently instruct, in the hope that God will grant them repentance, leading them to a knowledge of the truth. Beautiful. It just covers every base, Paul, doesn't he, really? The question to continually ask is this. When you get into a big debate, or seemingly, the question is this. Is it a gospel issue? All right. Is this issue threatening the gospel? Will my involvement with talking about this or debating this, or being involved in this, will it stop me from my gospel work? Satan loves you to get distracted from your gospel work. Remember, a long time ago, that me and a few others, we were doing some detached youth work, going out on the street, talking to kids on the street about Christ. And as we were doing it once, this other group of people turned up who were from a church about 3 or 4 miles away, who just planted the church right where we were, and started to come, came over to talk to the same group of young people that we were. How embarrassing is that? So I rang up their youth worker, who wasn't there, and you know, just agreed to meet with him. Who I don't think it would be unfair to say he was quite cocky and arrogant, really. Now, the temptation for me was to give him what I thought. Temptation for me was to get into a slanging match for the next few months, as we were much better than them. I could have easily done that. But as I was there, I was thinking, actually, you know, what is Satan going to use this for? It's just for me to stop doing the work. That's what he wants us to do. Well, one, it's not good for the gospel to Christians arguing, but he just wants it to be a massive distraction from the actual gospel work I'm doing. So I just kind of finished my conversation with him. We kind of parted with the smiles on our faces. I thought, let him do what he wants to do, even though I disagree with the whole foundation of it. Let him do what he's going to do, and I'll seek to do what. It's not my business, the foundation that he's laid. The only bit of business mine is what one I'm doing. So just don't be distracted, just keep on doing what you're doing. Be careful of distractions that Satan will put in your way. Alright, there will be plenty. Don't let him have the day. Right, next one. Be in control of your diary. Okay, the temptation for young people is for them to be all over the place and scatty. Who here has got a diary? Right. Who here uses it? That's pretty good. Now, I don't commit myself to anything without my diary. I see someone at church, hi, Joe, do you want to make up this week? Oh, I've got my diary, mate, sorry. Give us a ring tomorrow. I'll never commit to anything without my diary. Now, when I first started, I was a complete opposite. Yeah. And then there'd be double, treble, quadruple books. And I remember my pastor at my time, my colleague, my senior pastor at the time, I went to him, he said, Trevor, have you a diary? No, get one. Then I still didn't change. Trevor, you got a diary? Yeah, do you use it? No. He gave me the answers, but not much sympathy. Alright, so get a diary and then be in control of it. Okay? Be in control of it. This is what I do every single week. Okay? This is the first thing I do Monday morning. Okay? I do this on my computer. Alright? I divide the week like this. All pretty obvious, but this keeps me insane and my marriage going. Alright? Divide the week up into three segments. What is that? Okay, tomorrow. Right, and then Monday, Tuesday, Thursday. Right, and then what I do is I put in the immovables, the things that always happen and can't be. So I have a small group that day. I have a one-to-one at 7 in the morning there. 1, 2, 1. I have a CU meeting there. 12:30. A CU meeting there. 12:30. I have youth work that night. I sometimes have an elders meeting on Saturday morning, but not always. What else are movables? Oh yeah, I have at 7:45, I was going to one that morning till 9:15. That's till 8. Yep, youth work, church, morning.
in church then. And then I've got something on Saturday. If I say, look, I've got a big, I've got a conference or something on Saturday, then I'll take Thursday off. If I'm not going to do Saturday, then I'll take Saturday. So, don't know. And then I kind of look at the week and think, right, what other things have I got on that week? So, let's say I'm speaking at the youth group on Friday, and you're like, go on, yeah. Oh, yes, no, another thing. All day Tuesday afternoon is I've got an apprenticeship training. Monday mornings is prep for apprenticeship. Or team meeting is there. Sorry. Now they're the essential things. Right. So then I'm thinking, right, I've got two tools there, I've got to do preparation. So I'll think all of that is preparation and all that day. Or here we have a locust meal, I can't remember. So then I'm thinking, now basically what I'm doing is just making sure I'm in the top. So then I don't get to Friday. I'll make sure that preparation is done. Often what I'll do, if I've got a really busy 6 weeks, then I'll do that every single week in 6 weeks of the day, so I just make sure I've got enough time to go through and not pull up. Now I still drop things and that, but basically I'll do that every first thing I do is Monday morning is pop. And then I'll print it out, I'll put it up on the board, half an hour, put it out, put it in. Alright? I'd really encourage you to do that. And then sometimes days will go and I'll just rewrite just one for that day. Sometimes I do rewrite one for the afternoon. So basically, I'm going to be in control of it. Okay? I'm going to make sure the big thing is achieved. The enemy of the best is always the future. There's loads of good things in the enemy. Loads of good things. They won't be the best. Alright? I make sure that I do that, so that's the time. You know, some of you will take a year out or go into youth work, you'll come straight from kind of uni. Now, what's the uni life like? Discipline? Structures? Just most students are lazy. Because the whole environment is totally... Sorry if I upset anyone. But you have like 7 hours of lectures a week. 7 hours of lectures, that's nothing. And it's just kind of a bit of a slog. You then... So your whole life is built around who? Your whole student life, who's it built around? Number one, you. Me. Alright? Well, you move from that into Christian work. Very difficult to change. Just like that, isn't it? Well, that will help you make sure you come out of student life. It will also, the other spectrum, to make sure you don't burn out. Right, which is, you know, Christians go either, you know, if you're just coming out of student life, you could either be, you'll carry on being a student kind of life, getting up at 11 in the morning, going to bed at 3, and, you know, you've got to cut all that out if you're in Christian life, you can't do that anymore. Alright? Or you'll go, you just wait, wait, and then take it out. Alright? That kind of same. And also, you know, look at the year, building time out for conferences like this. Put this in your diary. Don't let anything encroach on it. Make sure you're there. Make sure it happens. All right, so it's like a water trough and you're being fed. Building family time, or for some of you, building time. You know, building time for friendships. You know, spend time with peers of your same age, not with young people all the time. All right. Have good friends if you're that bit older. You know, have good mates that you can go and see for a day and have a nice meal and talk about things that, you know, sometimes ladies want to talk about. The ladies talk about. But just get out of the bubble of your church. Secondly,
set clear goals. You know, John Stott, apparently every month, would take a whole day out just to review where he was and what his goals were and whether or not he was achieving them. I set myself 10 years to write a Bible overview. I spent the first 3 years just working out what I was going to teach, the second 3 years of writing notes on big sections of the Bible, and then the next 3 years writing notes for every single lesson. Now, it's taken me 14 years, but I set myself the task to do that. So, you know, look at your youth teams. Think which, or your youth group, which kids would it be best for me to mentor, maybe do one-to-ones with? Which ones need the most help, or which ones show the most potential within your leaders? Well, target them and seek to mentor them. Have clear goals. Maybe if you've got a good pastor or a good vicar, you know, meet regularly with them, say, these are my goals for this year, or this 6 months, or this term. What do you think? Do you think they're achievable? Do you think they're too big? Do you think they'll be doing a bit more? But set clear goals. If you aim at nothing, you won't hit it. Alright? And then lastly, learn that your worth is not in what you do, in your work or the mistakes you make, but what you are in Christ. Alright? If your youth work goes belly up, if your youth work is a disaster, God doesn't love you any more or any less than before it was a disaster or after. Alright? Your worth is in what you are in Christ, not in the work you do, the mistakes you make. I have to tell myself that constantly, because we so easily judge our worth, and especially blokes again, because we're task oriented, but what we achieve. But God doesn't, thankfully. He judges us by what we are in Christ. Right, any questions? Please, you can disagree with me. You know, just have a I think the first one is, you know, when I first came to ministry, the first 3 years before I got married, I just, 3 years before I got married, so, I didn't know I'd be able to go out. I had 3 or 4 weeks, and then when I was married, I went 3 or 4 weeks without taking a bath. My wife kept on mentioning it, I never listened. I got to the point where I should have to write a letter to me. And that kind of really kind of changed me, and I kind of made big changes in. But I think in Christian ministry, in one sense, you'll never get it right completely. If you think you're going to get it right, your expectations are too high. What I want to do is get it as right as I can. There's always going to be a slight tension, because if you're out and out for the gospel, there's going to be, you know, you're going to get it wrong sometimes, and sometimes I'm going to give too much time to on ministry and not enough time to my family. Alright? But keep on asking what's best for the gospel, because your whole life is gospel. Yeah? So what is best for the gospel? It's got to be best for the gospel that you take a day off every week, so that's why God's made you. It's got to be what's best for the gospel. So they've got a fresh children's and youth worker, not one that's, you know what I mean, and exhausted. Now you will be exhausted, you will be tired, then sometimes you won't be able to take a day off. Again, don't, you know, might be 2 weeks where you don't. But what are you marked by? Are you marked by never taking a day off? If you're marked by that, then you've got to change that. Because you won't last. And as one person said, when you're tired, what do? You do something that makes you feel good. And often that can be something that's wrong. You know, you just do something that makes you feel good. You sit in front of the telly and watch everything. As hard as we can help, you just want to feel good, which is tired. Well, you know, so I would say, first of all, you know, take a day off. Try and be disciplined. And secondly, I'd say to the young lady they seek to develop good friendships. I think for women it's even more important that you have good friendships and make them a priority. Arrange good holidays. Go away with some of your girlfriends for a week or two. Enjoy it. Enjoy yourself. But if you don't plan them, then they won't happen. So look at the beginning of the year, think, right, August, I'm going to go away for 2 weeks to wherever. Look at your half terms, plan them, otherwise they generally won't happen. So I'd say to you, develop good friendships with your girlfriend too. I remember Dick Lucas when I was on Cornell, and he used to lecture us, and he said that he used to go to ministers' meetings they'd say, okay, who wants to do a little paper for next time on the doctrine of sovereignty of God. Okay, so who would like to do a paper on the deity of Christ? Lots of hands would go. Okay, who wants to do a paper on the prayer life of the minister? No hands go up. Total silence. Prayer is always hard, so it always will be hard, and we want it to be as natural as we can, but because my heart is simple and often so cold, that therefore I have to plan it in. So plan it in. Be as structured as you can without it being remembering it's a relationship with God. So yeah, I would definitely be prayer diary. Seek to pray for specific things. Yeah, I mean, are you sort of taking a year out, or are you full time?
No,
okay, great. Well, what I would, what really helped me was it took me a few years to do it. It doesn't need to take you a few years, because you can just pick up, say, No Guts, No Glory by Ken Moser, or Fruit That Will Last by Tim. And what you'll get from that is clear biblical principles for youth work. For children's work, you picked up a book like Their God Is So Big. And what you'll get is clear biblical principles for youth work. So what I'd encourage you to do is to work out what the biblical agenda for youth work is. Now, it's no different, actually, from adult ministry. It's to make disciples of Christ. How do you make disciples of Christ? Well, by teaching the Word. So number one, you're going to need time to get to know that and prepare and teach that. All right? So I would maybe so work that out. Then when you're given things, think, does it fit into that? Now, obviously, as a young bloke, you need to be certain that, to a certain extent, flexible, and treat your boss as Paul would, who's told us as a father. But if you're being called to make disciples of young people, then your ministry will have that shape, and you need to graciously learn, does what I'm being asked fit into that? Make sure that we're not just kind of, from our own simple nature, creating a shape that we like, fits in with us, and we just say, well, it doesn't fit into my schedule, therefore I'll have to get rid of it. Make sure that what you're doing is riveted in biblical principles and a biblical shape. And if something that's given to you doesn't actually fit that, then just that's a brilliant thing to do. But I don't think it helps me make disciples of Christ. As gently as you can. But that may take 2 or 3 years for you to take a book like Fruit That Will Last and contextualise it to your situation. you know, what is the most important part of the building? Foundation, a bit that's not seen. What takes the most time to build? Foundation. All right. So, someone of your age, you're working out what your biblical foundation is usually. That might take quite a while. And then how's it going to fit the church you're in? So take your time on that. Don't rush it. Be convinced that what you're doing comes from biblical principles. Then once you've got that, then don't be moved. Does everybody hear the question? And how much of the teaching program should a full-time worker do? Yeah? Is that a question? Yeah. If I tell you what I do, and you can see what you think. I've written a 3-year Bible overview, so we basically follow that on a Sunday. Okay? And then we have more of an evangelistic thing on a Friday. This is for 11 to 14s and 14s to 18s. Now, what I will do is, let's think of this term. November, end of November, I'll think, right, I need to write a programme for next term. Okay? So, I will write from January right up to Easter, the programme for 11 to 14 year olds. So, there's every talk that's going to happen on the Sunday, and every talk that's going to happen on the Friday. Who does it? Who leads? Who does registration? So I'll do a grid, and I'll put in the team members. Okay, so that, and then I'll email them and say, any dates you can't make, let me know before this date. So then, when the term starts, I know that I'm going to have them there every week, unless there's an accident or disaster. So I'm giving them as much opportunity as I can to let me know what they can't make, and to let them know what they're doing, and then I will do usually the first 4 or 5 weeks of every term's talks. So that every leader has at least 4 or 5 weeks to prepare their talk, which I think as a full-time worker, I should give them as much chance as possible to prepare. If there's teachers in the group, I usually give them the talks after half term, so they've got a bit of time in the half term for them. Right? So I'll try and do the talk. This is youth, but probably not so much children. I'll do the talks for the first 4 or 5 weeks, so it gives them at least 4 or 5 weeks to prepare. And then what I'll do is I'll try as much as I can to give them ammunition, so books to read if they're doing a talk. I'll try and meet up with them before and after to critique them on their talk, and train them in how to teach. So I'm, you know, one of my main roles is to train them to teach the Bible. Now, if you're, you know, some of you that are a lot younger, you won't be able to do that at the moment because you haven't got the skills or the knowledge or the tools. But be look at long term, be looking to see that as your role. It's really good. One of the reasons I do that is someone says, "What are you doing?" I say, "Oh, here they are. Have a look at this." Or I can just say, "Well, look, this is my week," and I just go through it. Often people will not understand what you do. So you'll see someone digging a hole in the road, a gas man, and you know there's sweat pouring down on them. You know, you think that's really hard work. Sitting in front of a few books for a whole morning. Doesn't look very hard, but you're writing a talk, it's jolly hard. So at times you just got to accept that people ain't often going to understand what you're about and what you do. Now, I can remember once, as clear as day, someone saying, with not a bad motive at all, Trevor's good at talks, he must only take him 10 minutes to get him ready. And I remember again when I was on Cornell, Dick Lucas saying, the harder you work at talks, the more clear you'll be able to make it to people. Okay? The more clearer you make it for people, the easier they will think it is for you to get it ready. And the easier they think it is for you to get it ready, the more pressure they will put on you to not spend so much time getting it ready. Now he's exactly right. The more time I spend on talks, the more clearer I am. The more simpler I can make it. It takes a massive amount of work. And when you're just starting as well, a talk will take you a lot longer than it would take me, because I've got, 15 years, 20 years of experience of preaching and teaching to draw from, Bible knowledge. You've got very little because you've only just started. Alright? So that's the first thing. Second thing, I think it does take time for you to work through that if you're being paid by a church, that you feel as if they own you. Alright? So if I go and pick my girls up from school, and people look at me and say, what's he doing today? And picking his girls up again. They don't know that. I've had a small group that finished a quarter every night before. They don't know that. This is my week last week. Last week or the week before. Monday was small group. Tuesday, I had a one-to-one with one of my leaders, which I got home about 11 o'clock. Wednesday was the 14 to 18 leaders team meeting. Thursday, I had that evening off. Friday was youth work. Saturday, I was at here in Tim to some of the leaders of that. Sunday, after church, was squash. Therefore, if I take my kids to school on a Sunday morning, on Monday morning, do they know that I've done all that? No. So, if they've got a problem with that, whose problem is it? It ain't mine. It's theirs. Now, so as long as your conscience is clear before God that you're doing all you can to work everything as hard as you can for the gospel, if other people get a wrong view, it's their problem. All right? You're not owned by them. So, but you, that will take a bit of time. It's a few years to work through that. Now I don't what they think. But I didn't. There was a time where I did very much and was controlled by that. But you're not owned by them.